100% Climate Friday. This show will keep you up to date on everything climate justice related in a rapidly changing world. We will discuss breaking news and updates on environmental issues, the climate crisis, COVID-19, and politics. This show will make tangible how the climate crisis is already impacting our lives and what you can do about it. So tune in every Friday at 9 o'clock a.m. right here on WPFW 89.3, your jazz and justice station.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. It is such an exciting day. We ask you to go to the phone. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Or you can call 1-800-222-9739. That's 1-800-222-9739. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning. Sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations. And then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW. And it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show. You and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. If you call now 1-800-222-9739, that's 1-800-222-WPFW, or go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, 1-800-222-WPFW or go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
Sergo, this is John Cain, and I want to invite you to join me right here on WPFW on Fridays at 2 p.m. for Let's Talk Native. I will deliver guests and commentary each week on the real-life issues facing Native people. No romanticizing and no Hollywood stereotypes here. We'll talk real history and culture and life as it is and as it should be. Our shows are available as podcasts on your favorite podcast platforms and as videos on our Let's Talk Native TV YouTube channel. Find links and more at our website, www.letstalknative.com. And I'll see you here Fridays at 2 p.m. for Let's Talk Native with John Cain.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on. Come on.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now, here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads. We want to thank everybody again who's been emailing, texting us from around the world. We've been getting calls from South America, Africa, everywhere. So thank you for making Crossroads available to folks globally. As usual, we try to bring you a topic or show that's interesting and something that you can bite your teeth into. And today is the national election, November the 5th. And our show will be all 2 hours. This is the first Tuesday of each month. And on the first Tuesday, we do a two-hour special live from the world-famous historic Ben's Chili Bowl on U Street in Washington, D.C. To start our show off this morning, we're going to talk about, as usual, the grapevine, information that you can use. Great. You like that, huh? Hey. Overdose deaths are rising among Black and Indigenous Americans. Experts say responses such as mobile and mail order safety supplies are needed. The recent decline in overdose deaths hide a tremendous disparity by race. Deaths have fallen only among white people, while continuing to rise among people of color, according to a new state line analysis of federal data. Health experts in non-white communities say they are finding strategies that work in their areas, but they still struggle for recognition and funding to address the problem. In all, nearly 5,000 more people of color died from overdoses in 2023 than in 2021, while deaths among white people dropped by more than 6,000, according to analysis of the Center for Disease Control. Some states are turning miscarriages and stillbirths into criminal cases against women. How a person handles a pregnancy loss and where it occurs can be the difference between a private medical issue or facing a criminal charges. It often starts with suspicion. Why didn't she call for an ambulance when the bleeding started? What if she didn't want the baby? Maybe she took something or inquired about abortion pills. How a person handles a pregnancy loss and where it occurs can mean the difference between a private medical issue and a criminal charge for abuse of a corpse, child neglect, or even murder. States across the country have been using a series of laws and court rulings in the past decade to criminalize how women react to pregnancy loss. Legal experts say the fear and suspicion following the Supreme Court decision in Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health Organization that allows states to ban abortion may be making things worse. How children end up in a Cleveland adult court, a bond over explainer. Cayuga County transferred more children, most of whom are Black, to adult courts than any other Ohio county. A coalition of more than 30 congregations and organizations assembled just a block west of the towering Cayuga County Juvenile Court to learn about a process called a bind over that allows children accused of crimes to be treated as adults. Cayuga County transferred more children to adult court than any other county in the state. In the past decade, 94% were Black, according to state records. And the question is, why? Oh, man, this is terrible. Police hurt thousands of teens every year. It's a striking number of Black girls. Isn't that something? We just found out that, well, where is it? What happened? I lost. Okay. Black youths make up the majority of kids on the receiving end of police violence. And a striking number of them are girls, an investigation by the Marshall Project found. There's no comprehensive national database of violent interaction between police and civilians. But when we look at the data for six large police departments that provided detailed demographic information on use of force incidents, we found nearly 4,000 youngsters, 17 and under, experienced police violence from 2015 to 2020. Almost 800 of the children and teens, roughly a fifth of the total, were Black girls. White girls were involved in about 120 cases, representing only 3% of the use of force incidents involving minors. But Black girls also accounted for a significant share of the cases in New Orleans. Every girl in use of force data was Black. Two-thirds of the girls who lived in the city are Black. A spokesman for the police department emphasized that all but one of the incidents involved lower levels of force. This terrible. This stuff is just terrible. It turns your stomach. And lastly, I just want to say thank you for joining us this morning for Grapevine. And before we start, this is National Election Day, and you have to vote. Vote, people. And we got a little PSA that we're going to run to you. Go ahead, Mike. You can cut it loose.
I think there's blame on both sides.
There are times when we have to come together and stand up to protect our way of life.
As leaders in our communities, people come to us when they need help.
Now, we need you to do something for us.
We need you to vote.
There are politicians that want to make it hard for you to vote because they want to control your life.
Our lives depend on our right to choose.
Our lives depend on getting a 21st century education.
That have jobs that pay a living wage.
Our lives depend on clean air and clean water.
Our lives depend on science and knowing the truth.
We know you will show up when it is time to vote for our next president. For some of you, 2020 can't come soon enough.
I am absolutely a nationalist, and I'm proud of it.
Our lives depend on you voting this November 6th in the midterms.
Vote.
Our lives depend on it.
And thank you. That's right. Vote, people. If you're listening, vote, vote, vote. And for all the folks who are in prisons and cells and detention centers and immigration centers that's been listening to our show, vote. If you can't vote, if you're in a state that doesn't permit you to vote while you're incarcerated or while you're on some kind of release or off a release, you can vote. If you don't vote, it's a vote for Trump. That's all it is. We need to vote, vote. A lot of you are in prison right now because of laws that were passed. So we have to vote for people to make the laws that make it easier or accessible for us to have returned safely and without doing a lot of time back to our families. So this is one of the few chances or times that you can participate in something that is going to impact your life and your kids' life by voting. And this morning, our topic is, as we said last week, this is the second part of a two-part show about the role of returnees in this upcoming election. And we have two folks who we trust, like, admire, and respect. And we always call them in. When we can't find nobody else, we call these two rascals. So our guest this morning is Charles Thornton, chair of the D.C. Correctional Information Council, and Miss Nicole Porter, the Sentencing Project. We're going to make you a star, Nicole. You on this radio every month, lady. Thank you for joining us. And also joining us is our distinguished co-host, Miss Nikeche Taifa. Good morning, Nikeche.
Good morning, Roach and Nicole and Charles. And I'm going to be driving, so I'll be mainly listening, but, you know, always glad to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. We'll start off the interview with Charles Thornton, the chairman of the Correctional Information Council. Explain what the Correctional Information Council is briefly and what the role is that returning citizens can play in the election, Charles. You can't hear him? Go ahead. Go ahead, Chubb. How's that, Mike? Can you hear him now? Well, can you hear me? Okay, well, I'll keep on talking until we get his mic squared away. Let me do it this way. We're talking about the voting rights of returning citizens. We have a technical issue, and he's working on that issue. And we were listening to Charles Thornton. Oh, that's a young one. I was wondering why that phone didn't work. Man, this is some morning that my phone ain't working, and we're having a little technical issue. Well, let's go with Nicole. Can you hear Nicole? No, okay. Well, I can just keep on talking then until you get it squared away. In fact, we'd do it like this, Mike. There we go. You got it? Yes.
Hey. Can you hear us now?
Testing, Mike. Great.
Okay, pull it up.
How about now?
How's that? Is that better?
Still okay. Too close, Mike.
Well, let's do this. Put him on the phone.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me now?
Hey, Mike, this is Roach. I'm putting him in. Okay.
All right, so. Sorry about the technical difficulties we had. I want to say good morning to everyone.
My name is Charles Stone, and as Roach mentioned, I'm the chair of the Corrections Information Council. I'm also at the office of DC, Office of Human Rights at DC. So the Corrections Information Council is a legislatively mandated agency which monitors assignment for DC residents who are incarcerated in the BOP, as well as the DC jail central cell block. And it also extends to the DYRS, Department of Youth Rehabilitation Services. So our role is to monitor conditions of confinement, and we write reports on the information that we see, and we send those reports out to the Congresswoman Norton, the mayor, and the chair of the council.
Okay. Y'all also was one of the directors of the Mayor's Office of Returning Citizens. And he's one of the few folks who's been a director that we've been working with through the years. And I'm telling you, he should be still the director of Returning Citizens and a couple more things in this city, because Charles has been leading the fight on making things better for those less fortunate than us. Joining us is our distinguished guest, Ms. Nicole Porter from the Citizen Project. And the Citizen Project just completed a report on the voting rights of returning citizens. Can you want to give us an overview of your report, Ms. Nicole Porter? Can you hear it now on the phone? Go ahead then, Nicole. We can't hear it. What about the mic? Is the mic or the phone working? Well, we get it together. I mean, we're down at the Chili Bowl on U Street, and we have some technical problems. The guy just dropped a whole basket of half smokes, and it messed up the equipment. So we're trying to get the half smokes out of the way so we can still stay on the air. But we're listening to Nicole Porter from the Citizen Project, and they did a study in terms of the voting rights of returning citizens. Can you hear me? Still can't hear it. Okay, well, come on. Go ahead. Yeah.
All right. So the Sentencing Project released a report last month, Locked Out 2024. That provides an overview of the number of people disenfranchised nationally due to felony conviction, and also shares state estimates for the people who are disenfranchised within states due to felony convictions. So nationally, the Sentencing Project found that 4 million people are locked out of voting this election cycle, so they can't participate in the franchise today. Now that's down 31% since the number of people disenfranchised peaked in 2016, and the number's down because there's been reforms. There's been expansions in the franchise over the last 8 years to allow people with felony convictions to vote. The state that did it the most was Florida, when in 2018, a majority of Floridians voted to expand the franchise to over 1 million people in the state with felony convictions who've completed their sentence. Most people in the state who've completed their felony convictions. Other changes since felony disenfranchisement rate peaked in 2016 is New York and California and Minnesota, all states that have expanded the vote to tens of thousands of individuals. Even with those changes, even with the decrease in the number of people who are disenfranchised, there are still millions of people disenfranchised today. So we are recognizing that people are not able to participate in the franchise, but also acknowledging that there are new voters today. And it's been so encouraging. Should I keep talking?
Keep on.
So it's been so encouraging to see that there are new people eligible to vote, and they've registered. I have a colleague in Nebraska who got her voting rights back just last week. She served several years in Nebraska in prison, and because of a change in law there, is now able to vote. There's a colleague in New Jersey who actually went to the polls this morning and voted for the first time. He got his vote back as soon as he walked out of prison, And New Jersey expanded their voting rights to people on probation and parole. People, as soon as they leave incarceration, a few years ago, and 70,000 people in the state of New Jersey got their voting rights back, including a guy who I know who sent a video to me earlier this morning, who was walking from the polling locations after he cast his vote in the state of New Jersey.
Awesome. Okay. You know, that's one of the things that we've been focusing on here is that there's 79 million folks in America with criminal records, 79 million people with criminal records. And we need to do something to get them folks involved. Depending on what state you're in, where folks with a criminal record can vote. There are four states that allow you to vote while you're in prison and still serving time. That's Maine, Vermont, Puerto Rico, and D.C. Mm-hmm. And you can vote while you're incarcerated in every government. Yeah, you can vote while you're incarcerated, regardless of what your sentence is. So we used this strategy in 94 when the late mayor, Myron Barry, got released from prison. We mobilized and organized the returning citizen population, and we played a substantial role in getting Myron Barry reelected. What we're saying this morning that you got off the 79 million people, about half of that can vote depending on what state you're in. And for those men and women who are listening to us from institutions around the world and around the country, here's something you can do. You can participate. Get your wife, mother, sister, brother, neighbor, somebody to register and vote on your behalf or for the candidate that you support. And that's what we're pushing this morning. And I, these two guests, Charles Thornton and Nicole Porter, have been working in this particular field. And Charles has been all over the country, in fact, out of the country, the couple of foreign countries, to connect with returning citizens and what's going on in those places and what can be done to improve the status of the least, the lost, and the less fortunate. And they just had a voter registration campaign last week at the D.C. jail. You want to give us some rundown on that, Charles?
Absolutely. So at the jail, starting on Tuesday, we did what's called early voting. The D.C. jail is a voting place, so you can actually cast your ballot there. And it was definitely for all of the residents at the jail. Early voting started on Tuesday. We did early voting Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Out of the 1,900 or so residents at the jail, 454 were able to cast that ballot. So if you do the math, that's a little over 20%. And, you know, historically, we do average, you know, anywhere from 20 to, you know, 30% of the guys in the Department of Correction who actually cast a ballot. And there was a historic election that took place in 2008. And in 2008, we saw almost 50% of the folks that were registered in the jail cast that ballot. That was during the President Obama's election. One of the things, you know, and again, vote. This is the day. This is where your voices is heard. One of the things we wanted to do with the show today was kind of get a feel for how DC got to be in some circles looked at as the most, I don't want to use the term lenient because that ain't what it is.
Progressive.
You know, and we're not a state, so I ain't going to say state, but place in this country where incarcerated people are able to vote. And it didn't come by accident. When you really look at D.C., you have to really go back to home rule. And it was through home rule that we were able to get a mayor. You know, we talked last week, Walter Washington being the first mayor of the District of Columbia, but it was the second mayor, our, you know, great Myron Barry, who actually signed legislation in 1980 that allowed folks on trial at the D.C. jail, as well as those convicted of misdemeanors, to be able to vote while incarcerated. And it also extended the right to anyone who returned from incarceration, no matter whether you were on parole, probation, it did not matter. So that was a very progressive move. And as we say, as Roach mentioned earlier, in 1994, following the footsteps of Roach Brown, they were able to help the mayor Burr get back in office during his 1994 campaign. So that was very historic. It was because of the legislation, and that's what we vote for, so that we can create laws that will allow us to do.
There you go.
Lots
there
of
you
things.
Go. There you go. You know, one of the things that you popped up while you were talking, Charles, is that when we were able to play a part in helping Myron Barry get elected, when he got in and after coming out of prison, he appointed not one, but two people to the D.C. Board of Parole, mm-hmm. Donald Streeter, yes, and Marcelima Cruises. And we had two returning citizens on the D.C. Board of Parole. The Murray allowed us to create the Office of Ex-Offender Affairs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he done stuff 30 years ago that other states are now appointed. They just appointed Kimberly Smith, the mm-hmm. young lady who had all that time and got a pardon. Mm-hmm. She was appointed to the Virginia Board of Parole. Mm-hmm. So as a result of what Myron Barry did and changing laws and helping folks, we had people in key positions in the mm-hmm. criminal, from prosecutors to parole people to judges, mm-hmm. who were sympathetic to treating people as human beings, not as throwaway items. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he played a part in making things. He's passed away. He's not here. And the impact of what he did is still affecting us now, mm-hmm. in getting people registered to vote, to participate in the election. And I want to throw it over to Nicole Porter. I like that name.
I just wanted to add, what you all are saying is so right. Our former mayor, Marion Barry's legacy is not just felt here in the district, but also across this country. And there are opportunities, even though people shouldn't have had to go through prison, people shouldn't have had to go through the criminal legal system. But because this United States is such a high rate of incarceration, there's a lot of people now who are impacted by it. You mentioned it. You mentioned the 19 million people that have a felony conviction, and there's even more that have some criminal legal That's system right. involvement. And because of that, there's a growing number of elected officials with criminal legal history. And Marion Barry and the leadership in D.C. has certainly laid a foundation. But right now, there's a state legislator out in Washington State. Her name is Tara Simmons. She's a state representative with a former conviction history. And because of her lived experience, she has shepherded legislation to expand the vote to people in prison and Washington state prisons and other criminal legal system reforms in Washington state. Do you all know that the first Black speaker of the Virginia State House has a felony conviction history?
Yes, I read that.
So undoubtedly, Mr. Scott also is receptive and empathetic with the people directly impacted by the criminal legal system. Yeah. And hopefully his leadership when it comes to the response to crime, when it comes to supporting community safety, isn't just about disappearing Black folks behind prison walls, but is about addressing the root causes and preventing crime to begin with, from happening to begin with, and then also supporting people who are most at risk of being involved with the criminal legal system. So you got Tara Simmons out west, you got Don Scott right in our neighboring state, right to the south, and there are other elected officials who may have spent time in prison, but also who have loved ones who spent time in prison, and that also inspires their leadership. So there's a state senator in Massachusetts who often talks about her brother and how his incarceration has inspired the way that she's been in office. And your guest in your second hour today, Councilmember Robert White, will also have personal experiences to share in terms of how incarceration has impacted his family.
And can I add something
I want to also bring to light?
Wait a minute, we got a caller on. We got one caller on. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is, I had actually forgot about people in jail were still eligible to vote. But that probably explains why so many guys that have like been real vocal about I'm voting for Trump have been locked up, and I know they have. But when you think about the prisons, almost every prison I've been to, they only show Fox News. And maybe that's the reason why their information and their attitude is so twisted, because that's the only thing they've been listening to.
Yeah, I think that was a good comment. One of the things I wanted to bring to light is the role that people with lived experience play in this whole process. If you go back, you know, and we talk about how progressive the district is, you know, and all of the legislation that was put in place that was passed in D.C., but it was because of, you know, the activists and the advocacy that took place in the district. And I'm talking about going back 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, it was people that were actually going in the street, marching, you know, we were doing all kind of things, you know, a lot of it was led by Roach and a whole lot of other people. If I start calling out names, I know I'm gonna miss somebody.
Yeah.
So I don't wanna really do that. But it was because of that activism and that advocacy in the district that allow us to get to where we at today. And as a result of it, you know, you can see the benefits now. I remember Marion when he used to say, you know, trying to change the tide is just like trying to move one of them big ships. You just keep turning and turning and turning. And ultimately it began to change with the tide, you know. So, you know, my hat goes off to all them guys, man, and girls. Let me say women, you know, who hit the streets. You know, we would go down to the Wilson building.
Yeah.
We would, you know, I remember Willie Wilson took a busload of folks to 14th Street Bridge and laid out in the street, backing up traffic, all for these issues. So, you know, it's been a long, long road to get to where we at. And it's a lot more to do.
Here's the thing. Nowadays, the young people, all the things that we did, and some people think they're crazy.
Wait a minute, she's still on the phone. Hey, we still have somebody on the phone?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
Okay, are you finished?
And I'm hearing what the guy's saying, and all that he's saying is true. We used to be really, really involved, but these young people now think they can do everything on TikTok and on the computer, and I think that's why some of them really don't get the full story.
Hmm. Okay, thank you for your comment. We appreciate
you. You're welcome. Good show.
She mentioned that there's a guy in the state legislature in Virginia named Don Scott who's a returning citizen, but he did 8 years in the federal prison. And for folks who don't know what the role of a Speaker of the House in the legislature, he decides who's going to speak. He controls the flow, the documentation, and that kind of stuff. And he's a returning citizen. Here's one that we forgot. That the Central Park Three, the five guys that Trump recommended or suggested that they be executed. And after 7 years, they found out that they were innocent. So Youssef, one of the gentlemen in the Central Park Five, has gotten elected to the city council in New York City.
Damn.
We try to Google, Charles and Nicole, how many people who are in criminal records have been convicted are in state legislators or in positions of influence or power, and nobody has that list. You want to comment on that?
Well, I just say we can never, you know, we have to, we got our friend over in PG County, Calvin Hawkins, incarcerated with us.
Yes.
So we got to throw him out there too. Calvin is over in PG County.
He's a good man. In fact, we've talked to him several times. There's quite a few people who've been in prison or stumped their toe and been impacted by the criminal justice system who realize that in order to make a difference, we got to deal with the law, because the laws would put us in jail. The laws would let you out of jail. And if we can elect people who are sensitive to our perspective, we can find out, because this thing about guys doing 30, 40, 50 years in prison. I looked this up the other day, that they still got people incarcerated. And one of the things that's being pushed is the legalization of marijuana. And you still have people in prison for a drug that's legal. And nobody's made any retroactive laws or bills
to release them people. So if you vote people, go to the shelter. Mm-hmm. Tell them people on the mopeds, get off of that moped, man, and vote. Mm-hmm. We need, if you don't vote, it's a vote for Trump. Mm-hmm.
I think all of y'all are saying is so right. And I just wanted to respond to the to your caller's question about a lot of people voting, you know, being supportive of the Republicans and like listening to Fox News. There was a study that came out by the Marshall Project, which is an online publication that focuses on criminal legal reform, criminal legal policy issues. They actually surveyed 54,000 incarcerated residents and found that there's actually a lot of diversity in terms of political representation and political affiliation. A lot of people do vote. A lot of people do support the Republican Party, but also a lot of people identified as independents and a lot of people identified as Democrats. So it's about 30-30-30. And that's true in other studies that have tried to question people behind bars and their political affiliation. And to your comment, Roach, about nobody having a list of current elected officials with a criminal legal background history, yeah, I think that's something that we could work on. So I think that there's some more research that needs to be done there. And I think even though people are now disclosing that they have a felony conviction history, there's probably people who are in office who don't know, they know if they have a conviction history, but we don't know if they have one. So, but you're right that we could probably build out a list of people with lived experience in the criminal legal system who are currently in office.
So let me just say, if I can just
one of the things I still want to highlight too. Hello? Is the advocacy.
You got it next, KG. You
know. Okay.
So there are a number, it's a host of national formerly incarcerated organizations that are doing this work around the country. As Roach said, you know, I'm involved with a lot of them myself. I just returned from a conference for the FICPM. Formerly incarcerated convicted people and family movement down in Detroit. You had a National Council of Incarcerated, Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls.
Andrea James,
a good friend of mine. I'm actually on their board. So, you know, and then right here in D.C., you have NOC, the National Association of Returning Citizens. So, you know, it's a large number of groups that are still right now in the day nationally, you know, coming around these issues and bringing attention to these issues and building up, you know, power,
mm-hmm.
building up real power. I want to mention Norris, our friend down at Vote in New Orleans, yeah. you know. So, but again, you know, and what I'm talking about now is people with lived experience who are running organizations around, you know, registering and educating people on voting all around the country. So the work is being done.
Go ahead, Nikichi.
No, I was just going to say that I just want to make sure folk realize that although we're in certain jurisdictions like D.C. where we know where people are going to be voting and all like that, it really is not a partisan issue. Although Black folk are disproportionately represented, totally and completely disproportionately represented among the prison population, there are more white folk in prison than Black folk. So for people, all people, not to support the right of incarcerated people to vote because they feel that folk are going to be voting Democratic or a certain way. It's really a misnomer because this is an issue that impacts everyone and should benefit everyone, regardless of what their political party or position is. I just wanted to bring that out.
You know, something else that we need to add. A few months ago, there was somebody over the D.C. jail who was elected as an ANC commissioner while incarcerated and serving time. Mm-hmm. That person was shipped out. Now a young lady has been elected as an ANC, that's Advisory Neighborhood Commission.
Mm-hmm. She's and the third. The first is Joel Castone.
Yeah, so right what you have.
He's on the D.C. Sentencing Commission.
He is now.
So also we do want to add that Shamika Hayes is the actual ANC now, but this election, she's running again. We had about, I think, 9 candidates that are running for the ANC at this election. So, you know, just so right now it is Shamika. But, she may win again, mm-hmm. you know, but there is about 9 candidates that are running for the ANC, for the 7F08, which is the ANC for DC jail.
I'm glad Charles mentioned about all these different organizations around the country who are doing voting registration, voter education, and voter mobilization. And we had a couple here named Charlie and Pauline Sullivan, mm-hmm. who've been doing this for years, man. He's an ex-priest and she's an ex-nun. And for the last 40 years, mm-hmm. they've been in D.C. fighting to improve the situation of those less fortunate. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised, Charles, that you and I was last week at the Martin Luther King Library, and you was telling about how you went to Rwanda. Mm-hmm. And every time I talk to you in a few months, you in Detroit. You in Virginia, you in Atlanta, you in Washington State. And he's going around the country connecting with nonprofit organizations to make sure that we exercise our political expertise. Mm-hmm. And I'm thoroughly impressed with what you've been doing and where you're heading with this. Mm-hmm. We need, and I'm going to say this right now, first thing, we need a national representative or spokesperson to speak for our population, the returning citizens, because there's too many groups working in isolation. We need to pull this all together, because if we got 79 million people with criminal record, it's been reported that 7 out of every 10 Black male have a criminal record or conviction. We have a criminal record or conviction. We'll take a break and we'll be right back and finish this conversation. Well, I'm gonna just keep on going if we're gonna take a break. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM on your star or your dial. This is your station for jazz and justice. And we have heard from our buddy Rick, who calls in every month from Germany. I know this is one of your topics, but we got 2 callers on, and we'll take our first caller. You're on the air, please. Question or comment? Hello?
You talking to me?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, hi. How you doing? I was just calling because I wanted to push back a little on the fact that you all are saying about the comment that if you vote for another party is a vote for Trump. That's a scare tactic, first of all. And I don't think Trump is any different than the regular Republican Party. He's just more vocal about it. They were doing stuff undercover, and he's just out there with it. But if you look at his policies, it's the Republican policies. And then on top of that, I would like to remind everybody that it was the Democrats that pushed that 1994, I believe, before, incarceration bill that incarcerated more of us than in 1985, more of us were incarcerated than were enslaved in 1864, and that crime bill just increased it exponentially. So, and then on top of that, I think that the incarcerated people now realize that they know who incarcerated them. They know what party was responsible for, you know, for their disproportionate sentencing and everything. And you can't ask them to vote for a party that, you know, that basically ripped apart their families. And then can I just ask Ms. Taifa one thing? Because I really want to know, because I think that she was a part of SNCC, and I wanted to ask her a question about this voting. And they keep saying, oh, people died for the vote. And I wanted to know from her, does she think that, you know, because does she really think that her opinion on the fight for the right to vote, that people died for the right to vote, envisioned having to vote for lesser two evils, and the fact that if you don't vote, then that's not a choice. I want to know from her what she thinks about that.
Well, first of all, can you hear me? Because I'm kind of on the phone. I can't see or hear anything.
Yeah.
I was not the one who said if you don't vote, it's a vote for the lesser of two or whatever.
I didn't say that you did. That's not what I'm asking.
I just wanted to clear that up.
Keep on with it. Go ahead.
Okay, let me keep going.
Okay. I wasn't around during the SNCC days. I'm a little bit younger than that. But people okay. absolutely and completely did die for the right to vote. For the right to vote. They weren't dying with respect to whatever the specific issues were, regardless of the issues, whether folk agreed with them or not. We did not have the right. We did not have the choice to even go to the polls to express our opinion one way or the other. And that is what they died for. Okay. Now, of course, people wanted a better life and wanted to be able to do this, that, and the other, and right to self-determination and all of those things. But they could not even express that one way or the other because we could not even go to the poll. We were lynched just for trying to exercise that right. So I hear you. I understand what you're saying. But there's a distinction between between that and what is happening today. We should get out there and vote. And WPFW does not tell anybody who to vote for or who not to vote for. I just want to make that clear. But people should go out there and exercise that right.
But do you think? Do you think that people not voting is a choice? Is a choice to say we don't want either party, and the fact that they're not talking about the third parties because they want you to a binary choice, that they don't want that binary choice, and that the electing not to vote is actually a vote.
It is a vote.
I mean, if
you're
vote for genocide,
that.
You know, you vote for genocide, or I mean, I'm just asking you your opinion. If you vote for genocide or Jill Stein, I'm saying Jill. If you vote for Jill Stein, then you're voting for Trump. I mean, I just think that's just, you know, I just wanted to know your opinion if you think that is a choice. Whether you vote or not, or vote for a third party.
Let's go to the next caller.
Okay.
Go ahead. Let's go. Next caller, please. Question or comment?
Good morning. Looking at a comment, I'm pretty much on the same page as the previous caller, and I would just like to amplify, and I'm not supporting Trump in any way, but voting is not a zero-sum game. Just because you don't vote for her, it doesn't mean it's a vote for Trump unless you vote for Trump. I like to remind people, and I'm not supporting Trump in any way, means, or form, but yes, Trump's views on the Central Park Five and Criminal Justice Center are atrocious. I like to remind people, in reality, Harris, as state attorney in San Francisco, attorney general in California, are responsible for locking up and keeping incarcerated far more people than Trump has ever affected. Through her pushback against the criminalizing legal marijuana, her pushback on releasing, when the prisons were overcrowded, releasing nonviolent prisoners, her pushback on prison reduced sentences, and her even desire to lock up parents for their children not going to school. She's responsible for incarcerating far more people than Trump has ever done.
You know, go ahead, John.
Well, first of all, again, on that comment, he was never a prosecutor. Trump was the president, and during his presidency, he put more people to death than any other president in the history of the country. So, you know, and again, you know, this is, for me, is not a partisan issue. I'm an expert on incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people getting their right to vote all over this country. And so when you arrest it, you do not give up your citizenship.
That's right.
Right? So if you're still a citizen, why shouldn't you be able to vote? When you get arrested and convicted of a crime, you do not give up citizenship. That's why we fought so hard for the terminology in the district to be returning citizen, because you go in as a citizen and you return as a citizen. You do not give up that citizenship when you're arrested. So you do not give up your voting rights. But what we have is states, counties, jurisdictions that will not allow citizens to vote because they're incarcerated, which is not right.
And now, D.C., you don't lose your citizenship if you are
incarcerated.
It's of the crime of conviction.
Well, you don't lose your citizenship nowhere because you get incarcerated.
Well, this is true. This is true. Just because you are incarcerated does not mean you lose your citizenship in the United States. And so, and the United States, in fact, is an outlier when it comes to other modern democracies. When South Africa ended apartheid and then the country decided what kind of country it wanted to be, it actually guaranteed the vote for everyone in the country, including people in prison in that country. So the fact that in an era to remake a country after the fall of apartheid, South Africa has made a choice that the United States has not, means that the United States is being left behind in terms of its claims around being a model democracy. And I'll just say that there are other states that are working affirmatively to try to expand the vote to people in prison, regardless of their crime of conviction. So there are pending laws this year in Illinois, in New York, in California. We have a lot more work to do to get those laws passed and to make sure that people behind the walls can participate in the franchise, just like the many who can participate after incarceration.
You know, one of the things that touches me is that folks in prison can, if you can't vote, if you're listening in a cell or dormitory or cell block or detention facility, and you can't get out of prison, you can't vote for whatever reason, use that phone. Call your mother, your sister, your brother. Somebody has to vote. And I'm not saying who to vote for. I can't tell you that. But I would say this. I respect people who respect me. And if you cuss me out and talk bad about my wife, family, kids, and call me dumb, stupid, and so, I don't respect that. I don't care if you're a Republican or Democrat, you're a human being. And I'm dealing from the human being perspective that this gentleman is disrespecting and insulting people for the highest office. I got two felonies convictions and I couldn't get an apartment. He got 34 and he's running for president of the United States. You know, so this is like my wife said, this is Jiggy Boogie. And we're just tired of the Jiggy Boogie.
Yeah. You know, one of the things Nicole brought up was South Africa. And I want to say this, that, you know, the United Nations adopted what's called the Mandela Rule.
Yes.
So that was in 2018. And all of the nations that make up the United Nations adopted that. The Mandela Rules, you can Google it,
yes,
whatever you need, with the exception of one. And that one was the United States. It's the only one out of all of the nations that make up the United Nations who adopted and accepted the Mandela Rules.
Except
the United States. And that was during the Trump candidacy, when Trump was president.
Yeah. Well, our time is up. We got to get out of here. We got another hour coming to you. We do a 2-hour show on the first Tuesday of each month. Our next hour, we'll be joined by Van Jones, a CNN contributor, as well as City Councilman Robert White. And we'll be talking about presidential candidates and the criminal justice system. So we're staying on top of this voting rights and this political situation since today is the voting rights. So thank you for joining us. Stay tuned for the next hour. We're coming to you live from the world famous historic Ben's Chili Bowl. And I want to thank my good friend Charles Thornton, the chairman of the Correction Information Council, and Nicole Porter. We're going to make you a radio star, Nicole Porter.
I can't follow you.
To our co-host, Nikichi, we want to say so long. Thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned for the next hour. You will not be disappointed. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas. And vote!
You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer.
Hi, this is Tom Cole, host of G-Strings here on WPFW every Sunday morning. I and the rest of the station's volunteers and staff would like to invite you to join the WPFW Legacy Listener Circle by making a contribution to the station's future through your estate plan. There are a lot of ways to do that, through your IRA or retirement plan, by gifting us life insurance, or through your donor-advised fund. We'd be happy to have a confidential discussion with you as you consider a planned gift to the station. Please reach out to us at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or call us at 202-588-0999. Thank you for considering becoming a part of WPFW's future.
As Tuesday, November 5th approaches, the Pacifica Network is preparing to bring you relevant and resonant election night coverage. The coverage will include discussion of the most salient issues of this election cycle, as well as updates on down-ballot races, state and local initiatives, and on-the-ground reporting from coast to coast. Voter suppression, Palestine, the economy, immigration, abortion rights, and so much more are at stake with this presidential election. November 5th, 8 p.m. until midnight, you'll hear analysis, discussion, and community voices from around the country presented by the Pacifica Network. The day after, November 6th, Verna Avery Brown hosts What's at Stake the morning after post-election coverage. That's Tuesday, November 5th, 8 p.m., and Wednesday, November 6th, 9 a.m., election coverage, as only WPFW can present it. WPFW, presenting a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Award-winning former police officer and criminal justice adjunct professor Garland Nixon hosts News Views Fridays at 6 p.m. Tune in to hear a refreshing angle on today's state of affairs and other issues other media intentionally overlook. Find the episodes on iTunes Podcast and Google Play Music. Only on your station for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, Washington.
We're back. WPFW is excited to announce the return of the Social Justice Calendar, your go-to weekly update on the latest events, actions, and initiatives promoting equity, justice, and change across our community. The calendar's mission is to connect you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Each week, we'll spotlight rallies, workshops, forums, and community actions happening across the region. If you have an event to share, submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of said event in a format that is no longer than a sentence or two on Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, at least 2 weeks in advance of your event date. Space is limited, so submissions are considered in the order that they are received. The Social Justice Calendar is yet another way that WPFW connects, engages, and uplifts our community as we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at wpfwfm.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at wpfwfm.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. It is such an exciting day. We ask you to go to the phone. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to wpfw.org. Or you can call 1-800-222-9739. That's 1-800-222-9739. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning. Sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations. And then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW. And it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show. You and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. If you call now 1-800-222-9739, that's 1-800-222-WPFW, or